محمد و آل محمد.
Our session is about the practical of doing the wudu. So, wudu also has a lot of details in the Sharia, and we have some. We have different reasons why we do the wudu, and we have then the muqtilat of wudu, seven things that make it batil, and then we have the shara'it of the sihhat of wudu, the conditions which are compulsory to be met if we want our wudu to be performed correctly. And of course, we have the shara'it and conditions for the qabool and acceptability of the wudu in the eyes of Allah, which are different than the shara'it of sihhat of wudu, the conditions for the correctness of the wudu. So, but I guess we don't have time to go in all those details here. I was just informing you about it's important to learn those points also, because we may not be able to cover those points now, but just to give you an idea so that you continue to learn the rest of the details later on, inshallah. So, it's important to remember that before you start the wudu, you should make sure that that you learn about these things which I just mentioned, especially the shara'it of the sihhat of wudu and the qabool of the wudu. The water that we are using for wudu has to be mubah and permissible by the owner of the water. The place where you are standing to do the wudu has to be mubah and permissible for you to use that space and stand in that space while doing the wudu. Even that much area where you are standing, where the splashes of water will fall down, let's suppose 3 feet radius or 3 or 5 feet diameter, that area where the splashes and qatarat of wudu will fall down, the Sharia says all that area has to be mubah and permissible for you to use, otherwise it's haram for you. So I really wonder those people who are taking caravans to the Zionist state of Israel, how do they take those caravans? You know, they don't realize the fact that every step of your way, you are stepping on the Ghasbi Sarzameen. You usurp land. When the Sharia teaches us that even when doing the wudu, you have to be standing in a place which is mubah for you. Even stepping on the airport. The airport is also constructed after destroying the lands of the owners. Isn't that right? Did you take permission from the owners of those lands? So basically, everything in Islam has a social and political aspect. So, well, that's a different tangent of our discussion, but for the wudu, you have to remember that even the area where you are standing and your splashes are falling down has to be mubah and permissible by the owner of that area. The water has to be mubah also. All parts of your wudu should be tahir and pak and clean, Islamically clean. If some parts of your wudu are najis, let's suppose you have some blood on your hand or any other najasat, then you have to clean that najasat first before you start the wudu. If you start the wudu and you know that your hand is najis and you started the wudu, then basically when you wash your face and you wash your right hand and then you turn to your left hand and this has the blood on it, and then you start washing your blood later on, so your wudu will become batil. Why? Because you have messed up with the muwalat. Things you have to be done without a gap. Without a gap. So when in the middle of the wudu you started to wash your hand and make it tahir and pak, your muwalat is gone. The wudu becomes batil. So that's why we have to make sure that all parts of a wudu are Islamically clean and tahir and pak before you start the wudu. Even the bowl of water, if somebody is doing a wudu, taking the water in, from the bowl of water or the container of water, has to be mubah also. You can say, well, the water is mubah for me, it's permissible by the owner of the water, but the bowl doesn't belong to me, that's okay, water is mine, I can do the wudu. You cannot do the wudu, even if the bowl or the container of water is not mubah for you. The water is mubah and permissible for you to use from its owner, but the container or the bowl of water is not mubah for you. You cannot do the wudu. So we have to be particular about this also. In addition, we should remember that the time of wudu should be sufficient for you to perform the wudu. If the time is short, that you are unable to perform the wudu, if you do the wudu, your prayers will become qada, and you should not do the wudu. It's not your obligation on Allah's behalf to do the wudu at this time when time is running out for your prayers. Instead, you have to do tayammum and say your prayers. So you will do wudu when the time for prayers is sufficient for you to complete your prayers. If the time is so short, let's suppose you take 5 minutes to say your 2 rakats of Fajr prayers, and it's only last 5 minutes remaining. So, or last 5.5 minutes remaining, 5 minutes 30 seconds remaining. So, you may not do your wudu in 30 seconds. So, at this time, you should not do the wudu. You should do the tayammum quickly in 30 seconds. And then say your prayers within the time, so that it doesn't become qada. Your obligation is not to do the wudu, your obligation is to do the tayammum. So, also, it is important that the water of the wudu should not be harmful for us when we are doing the wudu. If the water is harmful, your obligation is to do the tayammum instead of the wudu. Maybe you do the wudu when the water is not harmful for you. So now that all those things are settled and you finally want to do the wudu, the first thing every ibadat requires us is the intention, niyat. Niyat is the soul of the entire ibadat. It's the essence of the entire ibadat. So, you know, so every ibadat requires the intention. So you have to do the intention that, of course, I'm doing this wudu qurbatan ilallah. You don't have to say it. None of our intentions for ibadat needs to be said orally. This theme should be in your mind. That's it. So if you have this theme in your mind, then it means that you have the intention. If you don't have this theme in your mind that I'm doing this wudu qurbatan ilallah, to seek the nearness of Allah, that I'm obeying His command, imtisalan li amrillahi ta'ala, I am obeying the command of Allah since my Lord has commanded me to do, so I'm doing it in order to obey the command of my Lord so that I get close to Him. If you have this theme in your mind, that's enough. That's all what it takes. I'm doing the wudu qurbatan ilallah, that's all what it takes. You don't have to say anything with your tongue. Sometimes, even if we say, it's not accepted. So let's be very clear, because, you know, let me give you an example to explain the concept of niyat. It should be crystal clear in the minds of all of you. Sometimes, even if we say something with our tongue, it is not considered to be the intention in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because in Allah yanzuru ila, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَنْظُرُ إِلَىٰ صُوَرِكُمْ وَلَا إِلَىٰ أَعْمَالِكُمْ وَلَكِنْ يَنْظُرُ إِلَىٰ قُلُوبِكُمْ. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam has said that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not look at your faces, nor does He look at your actions, Allah looks at your niyat. Allah looks at your souls, your qulub, your hearts. So whatever niyat we have in our hearts, this is what matters most to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What kind of niyat you have in your heart, irrelevant of what you say with your tongue. Let me give you an example to make it clear. Let's suppose you are sitting in your house and you are about to welcome two of your close friends in your house, and it's 15 minutes remaining to the prayer time. So you think in your mind, well, two of my friends are coming, and why don't I just go and do the wudu? Because by the time they come, it will be the prayer time, and we all will be praying at that time. My friends would ask me, hey, do we have wudu? And I can say comfortably to them, well, I have wudu. So they will appreciate me, well, this friend of mine is so nice and pious, he always stays on wudu all the time. In order to get the praise from your friends, with this intention, you stand up 15 minutes before the time of prayers, and you go and do the wudu, and at the time of doing the wudu in the washroom, you say, I do my wudu qurbatan ilallah. Is Allah going to accept your intention that you are saying orally? Your real intention is to show off to your friends, which is deep down in your hearts. Even if you say it orally, I'm doing it qurbatan ilallah, Allah is not going to accept it. So intention is not what you say. Intention is what you have in your heart. Look into your heart. What is the driving force behind your action? Inside your heart. That's your real intention. You don't have to say anything. Whatever is in your heart is your intention. It's already there. So you make your intention, and after making your intention, of course, you... It's mustahab in Islam to read certain du'as for all those parts of the wudu, whether the wajib parts of wudu or the mustahab parts of the wudu, which are mentioned in the hadith of Prophet and Abu Bakr in Islam. Especially we have a hadith of Amir al-Mu'mineen of Islam, which is mentioned in the Asrar of wudu. The secrets of wudu in Islam, all our ibadat have certain ahkam, the rulings, and then there are certain adab, the etiquettes, and then we have the asrar, the secrets, and then we have the hikam, the wisdoms. Ahkam and adab and asrar and hikam. That means the rulings, the etiquettes, the secrets, and the wisdoms. Every ibadat in the Sharia has a set of rulings, a set of etiquettes, a set of secrets hidden behind it, and a set of wisdoms that we are pursuing. Again, that's not my discussion to go about the wudu, but that's to give you an idea that there's a whole bunch of, there's an ocean to be learned about just wudu itself. And our great Urufa have written books about this subject to inform us about the hidden secrets behind every single segment of the wudu, and there are du'as which are mentioned, which is mustahab to be said when your eyes fall on water. You say, Alhamdulillahi ladhi ja'ala al-ma'a tahura wa lam yaj'alhu najisa. Bismillah wa billah, Alhamdulillahi ladhi ja'ala al-ma'a tahura wa lam yaj'alhu najisa. Why do we say that? Again, that's not the subject of my speech, but just giving you an idea to learn further, because we have whole bunch of mustahab things attached to every segment of the wudu. So, after doing the niyat, of course, you wash your hands 2 times. There's also another dua which we say when washing our hands. This is mustahab, it's not wajib. You can even drop it, but if you do, you get more sawab. Then we, gargle with the water. We put water into our mouth 3 times, and we put water in our into the nose 3 times, and there are duas also which we read for both of these things. These are also mustahab. And then we start the wajib portion of the wudu, which is pouring water on your face. This is wajib. That's the wajib portion, that you pour water on your face. When we do the wudu, water should be falling from the top towards the bottom. You should not pour water like this, from the bottom towards the top. This is going to make the wudu batil and invalid. The water should be poured from top towards the bottom, and starting from the roots of the hair, this we need to wash hair till the tip of the chin. And this is the length of the face that is wajib to be washed, and the width is what falls between the middle finger and the thumb of a regular person's hand. If some people have an extraordinary bigger hand or smaller hand, that is not counted to be the criteria. A regular person's hand is the criteria in the Sharia. So whatever falls between the middle finger and the thumb, this is the width which is wajib to be washed. Now we have something that we call, is there a whiteboard available?
Just get a Sharpie and a...
We have something which we call, please pay attention, min bab al muqaddima. Something, and this is a terminology that we use in our fiqh, our Islamic jurisprudence, min bab al muqaddima, from, you know, because of the prelude we do that. So in Islam, Islam says that the prelude towards a wajib, the muqaddima towards a wajib is also wajib. So let's suppose if Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is here, and he says to us to go on the rooftop. It's the command of my Imam and Wali and Mawla, and it's wajib on us to go on the rooftop. Isn't that right? Now, how can we go to the rooftop? I don't have wings to fly. From the elbows till the wrists. This is wrong, because your hands are wet with the wetness that belongs to the mustahab and recommended act. That mustahab, recommended act, and the water which belongs to the mustahab and recommended act is not going to suffice for the wajib washing of your hand. So when you're washing the wajib washing of your hand, you have to wash it till the tip of your fingers again, including this whole hand, even though it may be wet. Is it clear? And if somebody has long nails, you should make sure the water reaches beneath the nails. If you have some dirt in your nails, you have to remove the dirt first so that you make sure that the water reaches beneath your nails. The nail polish is not acceptable. It has to be removed before we start the wudu. Any other obstacle on the skin that can block the water reaching our skin should be removed before we start the wudu. So once you are done with washing your right hand completely till the tip of your fingers, then we start washing our left hand. So of course, pouring the water from the elbow to downwards towards the tip of the fingers, exactly similar to the right hand. And we should also remember that washing the face and the two hands has to be done in this special sequence. That means first you wash the face, then the right hand, then the left hand. You cannot mess up with this sequence. If you mess up with this sequence, let's suppose somebody washes the left hand first, and then the right hand, and then the face. Wudu is batil. It has to be done with the tartib. That means the special sequence, plus with the mu'alat, like I said earlier, that means doing the things without the gap. You have to do it consecutively without gap, immediately, without putting a gap between those washings and those segments of the wudu. So washing your face and the two hands once is wajib, for the second time it is mustahab, for the third time is haram. I repeat, washing your face and your two hands is wajib to wash for the first time, if your wudu is wajib. And washing your face and two hands for the second time is mustahab and recommended. For the third time is haram. You cannot wash for the third time. Now what is the definition of time? First time and second time and third time. What do you mean by time? Pehli dafa. Dafa kise kehte hain? How do we define the time? How can we define this is my first time, and this is my second time, and this is my third time? The definition is defined with your own intention. Let's suppose you are washing your face for the first time, and during the washing of your face for the first time, you pour water 5 times. And your intention is that, well, all these 5 times of water which I'm pouring, all those 5 times of water is counted to be first wash. Because that's your intention. If you make your intention that I'll pour 5 times of water, and this all 5 times are first washing, then it's okay. You can put water 5 times, and all of those 5 times are counted as one wash. So then now after washing, pouring water 5 times, and you are done with first wash, then you start pouring water another 5 times, and your intention is that those next 5 times of your water are all counted to be the second wash. So that one would be mustahab. And then you make an intention. If you make an intention, I wash another 11th time, that would be haram, because you already did your mustahab. Is it clear? So you can pour water 5 times or 4 times or 3 times or 6 times and count all of those pouring of water to be 1 time, because your intention is that all that is one wash. It depends on your own intention. So somebody can pour water 5 times but still count it to be one wash. It's possible. But we should also remember that we should not waste water when we do the wudu, because israf is haram in Islam. Overspending of anything, over usage of anything is haram in Islam, including the water for wudu. You know, Hassan Basri was doing the wudu on the river of Furat after the battle of Siffin, and he was wasting water while doing the wudu. Imam Ali al-Islam saw him wasting the water and doing israf, and the masoom can never let go any haram. He's unlike us. So Imam objected on his action, and he started to be sarcastic on the Imam and taunting over the Imam. Well, just a few days ago, the Battle of Siffin ended. Thousands and thousands of people, more than 80,000 people got killed. So you were fighting with Muawiyah a few days ago, and thousands of people were killed in the battle. So shedding their blood, it's not israf, but if I waste a few, you know, a little bit of water, you're calling to be israf. And Imam al-Islam said, are you sympathizing towards those people who died in the battle? Do you have a sympathy towards them? He said, yes, I am sympathizing. I'm sorrowful over their death. Imam cursed him by saying, then you be sorrowful for the rest of your life. Be sorrowful then, he said. So he remained sorrowful for the rest of his life. That was the curse of Imam Ali al-Islam. So israf is an israf, even if you do it with one drop of water, it doesn't matter. Our scholars say when you do the wudu, you turn off the tap in the middle. Don't let the water running during your wudu. Some people say when you're washing your left hand, let the water run. Don't put it, because you have to do the masa and rubbing of your head and feet with the same remaining water on your palms. Well, that's correct. But when you pour water on your left hand, let's suppose 1 time, 2 time, or 3 time, and you're with the niyat of washing it once, for instance, then you shut off the water. Now you rub it and let the water reach all parts of the hands. Now that the water has reached all parts of the left hand and you are done, now you should not touch any external water. Whatever remainder water remains on your palms, you should perform the rubbing of your head, mas, and the rubbing of your feet with the same remaining water. So now you should not touch the tap if it is wet. But when you pour water, you're not done with washing the left hand yet. You can turn off the tap. You turn off the tap and then you make the water reach all parts of the left hand. Now that the water has reached all parts of the left hand and you are done, after this you cannot touch any external water. Is it clear? So we need to turn the tap off so that the water is not... Actually, if you see some of our maraje and great personalities doing the wudu, you would be astonished. So this high level of spirituality cannot be achieved without high level of piety. How they do wudu? we would be astonished, you know. You find they turn on the tap, they're unlike us. They turn on the tap, they get as much water as it comes in your palm, you know, and they went water, then they shut the tap. Unlike us, the water is running, and I pour it like this, and the water is still running. They don't do it like this. So we have to be careful that we don't do any israf. If we do israf, our israf, first of all, is haram, that we have to do istighfar for it immediately. And second of all, we have to give humps out of every israf. Because this is not my zarurate shari'i. This is not my zarura shari'iyya, my Islamic necessity of life. So if I spend money on anything which is more than my Islamic necessity of life, this is not what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sanctioned and allowed me to do. So I'm spending money on more than what is my necessity, and I have to give khums out of it. That's a different discussion. So basically now, when you are done with washing your left hand, you allow the water to reach completely to all parts of the hand up to the tip of the fingers. And now with the remainder of the wetness on your palms, you have to, with the right hand, you have to do the mask over the head. You can, and after doing the mask on the head, then you have to do the mask on your feet. Right feet, you have to do it with the right hand up till this part. This bone, you know, you have to stretch your hand up till this bone. And likewise with the left hand, you have to do it up till this bone of the feet, left feet. So right hand with the right on the right feet, left hand on the left feet. Now, it is important to understand that when you're doing the mask of the head of a person can let's suppose this is the face of a person. Okay? Now, this is the forehead. Okay? So if you draw two lines on the forehead going straight, this in Arabic is called Muqaddamul Ra's. The front of the head. This is called the front of the head. So we have to do the mask on this segment of the head. You cannot do your mask here. You cannot do your mask and rubbing of the head here. You cannot do on the back side of the head. You have to do the mask on this segment. Now people say, can you do it on your hair? The answer is that if you pick up your hair and you expand your hair, extend your hair, does it get out of this segment? If they are so long hair that if you pick it up and you extend it, it gets out of this segment. That means your hair is long. Then you cannot do your mask on the hair. Then you have to part your hair and then do it on the skin. But if your hair is too short, that if you pick up your hair and you stretch it, it doesn't come out of this segment. It remains within the segment. Then you can do on such a short hair, you can do the mask and rubbing on the hair. Okay? Because in that kind of short hair, the water usually reaches the skin automatically. We have to do the mask on the skin. That's the bottom line. But we can do on the hair if it is short. If it doesn't, if you stretch it, it doesn't get out of this space, because in that case, the water reaches the skin. Is it clear? So for the girls who have long hair, there you always have to part it, and you have to do it on the skin always.
But also are we going to that or
that? Yeah, you can do it in both ways. You can do the mask like this. You know, it's mustahab to combine your three fingers together. You can do it with one finger also, but it's mustahab to combine three fingers together. You can do it like this. You can do it like this. You can do it like this with one finger. That's your choice.
I have a question.
Suppose if you like break your arm or something and you have a cast on your arm, how are you supposed to be a wuzu?
You break your arm?
Like if you have a cast.
Yeah, that's if you allow me, let me finish this discussion of the wuzu, because how we do wuzu on that is categorized as wuzu al-jabira, and we have a whole bunch of details about wuzu al-jabira. We call it wuzu al-jabira, wuzu of a person who is, who has some injury or a plaster or a bandage. Jabira in Arabic means a bandage. So wuzu of somebody who has a bandage on his hand or face, so he has a different ruling about that, which we may come to that separately. There's a whole bunch of rulings about that, I was talking about doing the mas on the head of a person. So you can do it like this, three fingers combined, which is mustahab. You can do it like this, three fingers combined like this, or you can do it with one finger like this, you know. And now, as far as doing the mas on your feet is concerned, you can also do the mas on the feet with your full hand, and you can also do the mas on your feet with one finger. So some ladies ask, you know, that if we have the nail polish on our on the nails of the feet, can we do the mas or not? Well, if you can only remove the nail polish from one of your nails in the feet, then you can do the mas. Because let's suppose you remove the nail polish from your thumb only, or this finger only, and you do the mas on this finger with one finger like this, that's okay, because it's allowed to do the mas with one finger. If you don't want to remove the nail polish of the rest of the fingers.
But
still, it's going to be tahara? Huh? It's called as a tahara? Well, nail polish is not najis. It's pak.
You can pray with nail polish on.
Pray with nail polish on your feet. It's not najis.
There was a lot of questions previously, maybe a couple of years ago, that if you take the nail polish from your smallest toenail, right, then you're still fine. But usually when you're doing a mass of your feet, you're not touching the smallest toenail. Because the way you're doing it, the smallest one can be
touched. Yeah, but we were supposing that if you are touching the smallest finger. What if you touch the smallest finger with one finger of yours, and you do it like this and reach it till that bone, then it's done. Okay. If you can do that, supposing that you can do that, then it would be done. Because must can be done with one finger.
No, one more question. The foot needs to be stable, right?
Yeah. When you're doing the mas, your foot should not be moving. So if your feet are moving and shaky, then your mas is not considered to be correct. It would be batil. So you either place your foot on something which is stable. You can put it on your leg also if you can be stable, you know, and you don't move. But usually it moves on the leg, but if you can be stable like this, or you can put it, keep it on the ground and do it there, but it should be stable. It should not be moving like this. If it's moving, the masa is batil. So, and you can do the wudu while walking also. Like you take water and you pour it on your left hand and you start walking a few steps, and then when you are done, you do the masa of the head here, and you walk a couple of feet and you do the masa of the feet here. That's all okay, because as long as you don't put a gap between the two things, so that the mu'alat thing is not disturbed. As long as you are doing it immediately, consecutively, without a gap, that's okay.
No, it's too far.
It must be within this segment. You have to make it. You can make it here, or here, or here.
So how far should it start? This
segment of the.
No. How far back?
Yeah, even a little bit of stretching is okay.
Yeah. this one?
Yeah, you're combining three fingers together. You do it a little bit like this, that's also okay. When you do the when we said, you know, it shouldn't have any external water reaching the palms, it includes the water which is on your forehead. So when you are stretching your hand, your fingers should not reach your forehead, because then you will grab water from external water from the forehead, which you were not supposed to grab. So be careful when you are extending your hand like this. You just stretch it a little bit and that's okay. Don't stretch it too much that it reaches the water on your forehead, because in that case you will have external water reaching your palms and now you are unable to do the mask of your feet with the external water. When you are unable to do, of course, how will you continue? Wudu will become batil.
We'll take one more question, Sakinama, and then we have to move on to the time.
Sometimes they say that if you do your mask and then the water, even if you leave your
you're
still didn't come to your roots of your hair to the forehead.
Suppose
the water is dripping onto your face. Is that okay?
That's okay, because water will drip. But at least your hand doesn't grab any external wetness, and that's fine. Even the water itself drips it, that's fine.
Okay, one thing as far as time is concerned, we have 20 minutes. How about after this year, we can do shower only, the ghusl, and then tamam we'll do it if people want to stay, and separately we can do later. So
okay,
we'll do shower demonstration and then the tayammum question. If you want to stay later after the next topic, then you can ask that question later with tayammum specifically, because that we don't do it that often. Okay,
yeah. Shower, ghusl is also like we have in those things, mashallah, a good job done by whatever brothers and sisters who did that. MashaAllah, may Allah give them more tawfiq. Ghusl, we have wajib and we have mustahab, both kinds of ghusl in Islam. And the procedure of doing the ghusl is uniform procedure. It's one format that we follow for every ghusl. Whether you do ghusl as a wajib, you do ghusl as a mustahab, you do ghusl, you perform the ghusl on the dead person's body, you do it on someone else, like a dead person's body. In all the cases, it's the one format of giving the ghusl or doing the ghusl. There are no multiple ways. So, of course, after doing the niyat, apart from all that, the water has to be mubah and the place has to be mubah where you're doing. That's all applicable in the case of ghusl also. But after doing the wudu, this is like a shower which they have connected here. So, you can do your ghusl under the shower. By manually doing the ghusl, like washing your head and the neck and the right side and left side, how I would explain. So you can either do the ghusl under the shower, or you can do the ghusl in a pool by just immersing your body at once inside the pool, which is the second form of ghusl that we call ghusl al-timasi. Ghusl and washing is divided into two kinds. The regular one, which we call the ghusl tartibi, that means the sequential ghusl that you do with the sequence, like you stand under the shower and do it in a sequence. You wash your head and neck on the right side and the left side. You follow the tartib and sequence. That's the regular one. And the other one is called irtimasi, which means that by immersing your body into a pool or a water or a lake, whatever, you do the niyat and you just drop down and your whole body is in water and it completely becomes wet, and you drop down with the niyat of ghusl and the ghusl is done. The whole body is washed together. So that's the second way, but we are not discussing that one right now. When you go to the shower after doing the niyat, what you would do is that because there are sprinkles of water falling on your head, so you have to make sure that the water reaches every hair and every part of your head and every part of your neck. You don't miss out on any hair, nothing remains dry. This is your obligation to make sure. So you wash the whole head and you wash your whole neck. In the ghusl, it's not compulsory, it's not your obligation at all to be worried about that the water falls from top to bottom. Even if the water, let's suppose there's a shower that pours water like this. You know, there's some spring, some, you know, nozzles here that spread water like this. And you can do ghusl like this also, because even if water comes from bottom towards the top, and ghusl is not a problem. So all you are supposed to do is to make sure after niyat that your head and your neck is completely washed and everything is now wet, nothing remains dry at all. And min bab al-muqaddima law also applies in the case of ghusl. When you're doing the ghusl, make sure that because it's wajib to wash your head and neck, so that's why our maraji have said that you have to wash a little bit further down from your neck, which serves as a muqaddimah and prelude for us to make sure that the wajib part has been washed. So you have to wash a little bit further down your neck. That's how you make sure you have washed the whole neck. So this is min bab al-muqaddimah. So after you have washed your head and neck, then you wash your complete right side, just as if you consider you divide your body into two pieces from the middle. So you wash your front right side and your back right side, including your private parts, in both the terms, that when you're washing the right hand side of your body, and when we wash the left hand side after that, in both the times we include our private parts always. So we are washing our whole complete right side. Raise your hand properly so you let the water pass in your under, in the armpits, in your fingers, in your nails, and even under your feet, because some people keep on standing like this, you know, and they don't let the water reach the bottom of their feet. So we have to be particular that we have to wash the whole complete right side without missing anything. And again, min bab al-muqaddima rule says, how to make sure that you have performed the wajib part of the washing the right side? You have to wash a little bit towards the left also, from the front and from the back, to make sure that the wajib part is covered. This is called min bab al-muqaddima regarding the washing of the right hand side. So now when you are done from washing of the right hand side, now you start washing your left hand side. So when you wash your complete left hand side, like I said, move your arms properly, make sure water reaches under your arms, complete right hand side, you wash your private parts also again, and you raise your feet so water reaches under your feet. Again, min bab al-muqaddima, wash a little bit towards your right hand side from the front and from the back, so that you make sure that the wajib amount of the left side is completely washed. And you are done with it. And ghusl, it's something which is you don't have to be worried about doing the ghusl with muwalat. Muwalat means pe-dar-pe kaam karna, doing something without a gap. This is wajib in wudu to make sure. But it's not wajib in the ghusl to make sure that you do everything without a gap. So you can wash your head and neck, and after you can get out of your washroom, after 5 minutes you can wash your right hand side, after 5 minutes you can again get out, and after 5 minutes you can wash your left hand side. So, because muwalat and doing things without a gap is not a condition in the ghusl. So, any other question we have for this?
No, washing the right hand side and the left hand side is mustahab or like
wajib? No, it's wajib. After niyat, you wash your head and neck completely, a little bit further like I explained, to make sure min bab al-muqaddima, you water your right hand side, then you wash your left hand side completely. This is wajib.
It's not like if you don't follow the sequence.
No, sequence is also wajib. Tartib is wajib in ghusl. Muwalat is not wajib. Doing it without a gap, that's not wajib in ghusl. You can have a gap. But tartib, in doing it in sequence, then you head and neck first, then the right hand side, then the left hand side, this is wajib. You have to do it in the sequence. Yes, please.
Is it wajib to do each side 3 times?
Sorry?
Is it wajib to do each side 3 times?
No. You just have to wash it once. It's wajib to wash your head and neck once, and your right hand side once, and your left hand side once. That's enough.
Yeah, in those cards it says three times.
Yeah,
they have written it
because you can, you know, just make
sure
that you don't miss out on any part of your body. But it's not wajib. What is wajib is just to wash once.
Sometimes we have to do
the
Ghanabat immediately,
so
we have a time limit.
Most of the Ghanabat is not wajib to do. It becomes wajib when you enter into the time of prayers. It's better in Islam to do the ghusl of Ghanabat ASAP. But it becomes wajib when you enter into the time of prayers. When you enter into the time of prayers, then it becomes wajib on you to pray. How can you pray without having taharat? La salata illa bi tahurin. Prophet said, without taharat, without tahur, there is no prayers. So we have to have tahur. Now tahur can be achieved by doing the wudu or by tayammum for those people tayammum for whom tayammum is applicable, and through the ghusl for those for whom the ghusl is applicable. So in the case of a Muslim person who is in the condition of janabat, ghusl is applicable upon him. So then we have to achieve the tahur in the form of ghusl. So it becomes wajib when the time of prayers enter. Before that, it's not wajib.
When we do ghusl, we don't have to do wudu before that, right?
When you are done with the ghusl janabat, it's not even jais to perform the wudu. It's not even allowed in the Sharia to do the wudu. Even if you try to do that, you know, you should not, because it's not jais in Islam. After ghusl janabat, you should not do the wudu. Ghusl janabat is sufficient for you to pray. Unless if you do some muqtil things, you do some act, you go to washroom, you know, relieve yourself, then of course you have to do the wudu. But otherwise, if you have done with the ghusl janabat, you don't have to, you cannot do the wudu. It's not jais.
Yes,
this is applicable only in ghusl janabat or all other ghusls?
It's applicable in the ghusl janabat, and about some of other ghusl, there's controversy. About ghusl janabat, there's no controversy among the maraji. So I always try to mention the common things. Now, some of the maraji have different fatwas about some other ghusl. Like Ayatollah Sistani's fatwa says that the ghusl of hairs for the woman is also sufficient, so they don't need to do the wudu after that. But the rest of the maraji don't say that. So Ayatollah Hui's fatwa says that ghusl of Jum'ah is enough, so you don't have to do wudu after that. But that's his fatwa. The rest of the maraji don't say that. Most of the maraji don't say that. So there are controversies about, you know, different fatwas about different other ghusl, but for the ghusl janabat, it's a matter of consensus among all.
Okay, at this point, what we'll do is we'll have 7 and under kids can go downstairs in the basement with Sister Sakina. 7 and under. They have a game downstairs in the basement. And since we are running late and almost a long day, what we'll do, instead of having men and women separately, we'll do all together, and we'll make it more reasonable as far as the privacy is concerned. And I'm sorry, you can take 7 and under downstairs, please. So 7 and under, go downstairs, you have a game downstairs. No, you guys have to stay here and learn these topics. That's why we want you to be here. Now, for the kids, can we do it next time? If you don't mind. I'm sorry. But if you make sure we have it for next time. Because the time is... Yes, exactly. Sure. If you have a question and answer, that would be good. In this case, sorry, should I apologize? So what we're going to do now... This topic is... So this topic is about taharat and najasat, okay? And kids who are baligh, we have to know these things. Parents, we have to know so we can teach our kids. So it's going to be a little bit open session. We're going to have some sensitive questions. If you don't understand some terminologies, you don't have to ask them all now in front of everyone. You can ask them separately afterwards, or you can ask your parents when you go home, what does that mean? What we're going to do now is I have a couple of questions openly. It's for boys, I mean for men, mainly because that's how we had. But Sister Sajda, if you have any specific girls' question just out of your mind for that we all can learn from there, you can have that as well. So I'm going to just ask question, Maulana, and then if you have specific questions about those issues, you can speak up. And this question will go until 6:30. So inshallah, we'll start with question number one. Well, now, first question we had is like, can we, is it allowed to urinate standing up?
Well, that is makruh in Islam. We should try to avoid the makruh things. It's not haram, but it is makruh. So we should always try to avoid that.
Especially in certain situations where we go to public restrooms, it's very nasty and we don't want to sit there. And those, is it allowed to just do it and then again do it?
Yeah, of course, makruh and ja'is.
Sure.
Every makruh is allowed in Islam. It's not haram. So you can, yes. The answer is that you can do
it. In that situation, we can.
Yeah.
Question number two.
Same thing, if you mean the frequently, it's going to be your habit.
Yes, we don't have to make it a habit, or we should avoid that if we can. Second question I had is that sometimes when we go to the bathroom outside our houses, and even the water is available, we can get it, and we use tissue paper. Is that sufficient to get the taharat, tissue paper, to clean ourselves?
For the urine, no.
One and two both, yeah.
For the urine, it's not sufficient. For the second one, it is sufficient if you do it with certain conditions, with certain conditions it would be sufficient. First of all, in the case a person has a loose motion or something, so in that case the najasat spreads, so then it's not sufficient to wipe it with tissue paper. It's not sufficient in that case. So it has certain conditions and then it will be accepted, otherwise you cannot do that.
So what we should do is to look for a glass, something, get water and go inside of the water and that is needed. Okay. The third question we had, if we have a young child in our house and it urinates in the bed mattress, it gets wet, what is the right way of cleaning it, getting a tahir before using the mattress, or is it sufficient to dry on its own?
It's always good to, mattress is really hard to make it park and tahir, I understand. But it's always better to live in a park condition in our house. The houses with the kids, it's hard to keep park and tahir. But we should try to keep it park and tahir as much as we can. Mattress is a very, very thick thing. In order to make it tahir, you do require special procedure. You have to take the mattress out, you connect it with the good water or the kaseer water, connect it with a pipe, let the water fall on it. You have to squeeze it so that the najasat, the main najasat, gets out of it first. And after that, you connect it again with the kur and kaseer water, and then you squeeze it so that the mutanajjis water is taken out, and the rang, gu and maza, the color, the taste, and the the smell totally goes away, and you squeeze it and you take it out. So if it is connected with the kur and or kaseer water, like a pipe, I gave of pipe, so it can be cleaned in that way. But if it's with a saleen water, then it's even a bigger problem. You have to do it three times. First time you have to take the asda najasat out by squeezing it. Two further times you have to pour water and press it completely and let the whole najasat go and mutanajjis water all those areas, that area which became wet in the first washing when you were removing the main asli najasat. All that area you have to wash it two more times, and after each time you have to squeeze it so you let the water go out completely.
How about the sons?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sun is not sufficient to clean this. Sun is a cleaning agent for some specific things like walls, like ceilings of the houses, like earth, but not for our mattress or things that we ourselves make najis. Sun is not a cleaning agent for those things.
Brother, you have a question?
Yes.
The next question I wanted to be had, you have a question?
As far as urinating, I know there's a dua. Is that something that's a short dua? Sorry, what is the intention of that dua? After urination, after cleanliness, someone had said, when you do the you wash yourself.
Well,
is there a dua?
I don't recall a dua right now on the top of my head.
But what is there intention there when you use the water to cleanse?
There may be a dua because we have duas about almost everything of our life. So there may be a dua also, but I do not recall. If I can recall, I can let you know later on if I recall, but right now I don't recall a dua.
Next question we had was, can we have pets in our house, like dogs or cat?
Well, pets, the najis animals which have haram meat, the haram meat animal, you should never keep inside your house. If you keep an haram meat animal inside your house, it should be kept in the cage, like a parrot is a haram meat animal. It's a bird, it's an animal, so it should be kept in a cage. A cat, very frequently found in the houses of some people. It's a big time problem, because cat drops a lot of hair, and lots of the hair are invisible. And your socks, your dresses, your sofa, it sits everywhere and it catches hair. And when you sit on the sofa and you have, you know, you have the hair on your dress or on your body, even if you have one hair on your dress or your body, your prayers will become batil. So, because any part of a cat is not a najis animal. So we are talking about the najasa. We are talking about the haram meat animal. Cat is a haram meat animal. Even though if you touch the cat, it's not your hand, but it doesn't become najis. We are not talking about the taharat and najasat. We are talking about the haram meat animal. Any haram meat animal's parts of the body, even if it's a hair, which sticks to your dress or your body, your prayers will become batil. So it's when you, if you plan to keep any haram meat animal in your house, keep it in a cage. Don't allow it to just wander in the whole house, you know, and making the life, you know, disturbed. Because you simply cannot see the hair. And even if you get to know after you are done with the prayers that you have these three hairs of the cat sticking on your dress, then you have to repeat your prayers.
Okay. Next question we have. Is there a question there? Okay, we'll come to that if you remember your question. The next question one we have was the leather. We have sofas in our house, and leather is, if it's made from haram meat animal, is that jais to have that? Can you sit on it, and would that cause any problem?
Well, even if the leather is from a halal meat animal, but it is not slaughtered in the Islamic way of slaughtering, the leather will still be najis. Even if it's a goat leather, what to talk of a haram meat animal, that's obvious. But even if an animal is a halal meat animal, but it is not slaughtered according to those five or six conditions that we have about slaughtering the animal, if it is not slaughtered according to those conditions, the animal, the leather of a halal meat animal will be haram, will be najis. Even if it is dry, it is najis, but the najasat will not reach you until your hand is wet or the leather is wet. One of those two has to be wet to transfer the najasat. So if you touch a dog, even if you touch a dog and the dog is dry and your hand is dry, your hand doesn't become najis. The najasat transfers with the wetness.
Brother has here is the belt we wear.
Yeah, the belts and the wallets and the tags of the jeans. Some people have the tags on their jeans made of leather and their jackets. Yeah, these are all najis leathers. So it has to be removed in the time of prayers. Nothing of your dress should be made of any najis leather. Even if it is a halal meat animal, but since it is not slaughtered in the Islamic way, even if it's the leather of a halal meat animal, it has to be taken off. You have to take your wallet out of your pocket, you have to remove your belt, and you have to take the tag off if you want to pray that means.
That's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. Pakistan, of course, in the Supul Muslimin, in our fiqh we say, Supul Muslimin, Marketplace of the Muslims is a an Islamic sign of being halal. So you don't have to worry about if you bought it from a Muslim country. That's okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Despite I've seen the label says made in England or maybe Italy or maybe
No.
That is problem.
That is very clear now.
Very,
when you buy something from a Muslim country and it says this is made in Italy.
But it's made in Pakistan, that's okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully, right?
Just for clarification.
Sure, thank you. The next question we have on is Istabra. And is it for both men and women, or is it mainly for boys and men?
Yeah, it's mentioned in the our fiqh that the women should do the nah nuh. The nah nuh means cuffing kind of thing, three times after urinating, and that is their istabra.
So if you have specific questions about some sensitive topics, we won't do it publicly, but you can go ask him separately and ask him what is istabra, how is it done, and he will answer this question in a private setting. Same is next question. This is sensitive. The topic of this session is most infrequently asked question. Because you will usually put the most frequently asked question. This is most infrequently asked questions.
IIYI instead of FYI. FAQ.
So the next question, Maulana, is also obviously is sensitive. Is masturbation haram?
Yes, it's haram for both the sexes.
Okay, so if you have specific questions about what it is, your uncle can answer, explain you what that means. But we just want to, people who know about it, you can answer the haram or halal.
It's haram in Islam for both the sexes.
Now, I'm
going to read in the hadith of the Holy Prophet. Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam has said, "Al-Nakeh bi yadihi mal'oon." Someone who masturbates is mal'oon, he's cursed by Allah. He deserves the laknat and curse of Allah.
So, what are you going to do now? I'm going to take specific questions from you guys. We just had general questions so everyone gets an idea. And the specific question you can ask Maulana's private question, you can go back and ask what that means and how it's done. But I want to open up to everyone else now to ask questions. Ladies, we haven't heard anything from you. It doesn't have to be anything about, it can be anything but najis, and najasa, tahara, anything else but private issues. So please open up. I'm sorry.
What about using plastic cover and mattress and then clean cover?
Plastic cover on the mattress?
What do you mean by that?
If a najasa, if you cannot clean the mattress, but plastic is it because the
najasa
will not be transferred.
Yeah, you can always do that. If you don't want to wash it, agar aap pak nahi karna chahte to aap plastic bicha dein to zahir si baat hai ki najasa to aap tak pahunchegi nahi to wo bilkul kiya ja sakta hai. So earlier we were discussing how to clean the mattress because it's very thick and so that is a special and a hard procedure. But otherwise, if you just want to stick some plastic on top of it and keep on using it, that's okay. Not a problem.
Next question we have, Marla, is that when we are shaving and it starts bleeding, and we wipe it, you still have dry blood there. What is the fatwa on that? Like, what is the ruling on that? Is that haram? Is it najis or what's going on? We bring prayer and stuff like that. Can you pray with that?
Yeah, the blood that may come out during the shave. Shaving of the beard is haram, first of all, unless somebody's just cutting a little bit of the hair from here like you did, because that's permitted in the fatwa of some of the maraje, not all of them, but some allow it. So if somebody's shaving and some blood comes out, of course it's najis, but that's just minor blood. It usually stops in few moments or few minutes. So you can just wait for time or the blood stops, then you clean on top of it and do the wudu.
But if you have already wudu and you drink the shave,
then it's not a, if you already do a wudu, your wudu doesn't become batil. All you have to do, just wait for a while, the blood stops, then you make it tahir and pak, Islamically wash it so that it becomes pak and tahir, and then you pray. Don't pray with that. You can pray with the blood on your clothes if the blood magnitude on your clothes is less than the the size of your thumbnail. I repeat my statement, please pay attention. You can pray with the blood on your clothes if the amount of blood on your clothes combined together is less than the size of your thumbnail. It is najis, but it is permitted for you to pray in it. But if you have blood on your body, you cannot pray. You have to make it tahir and pak first before you start your prayers.
Sometimes, hold on.
Yes. Go ahead, Adi.
Sometimes people have the Zanjita Vatam and you're standing over there and blood is different as part on your foot, but it's a small spot.
Zanjita Vatam is not permitted by any mushtahid's fatwa. That's first of all. Second of all, ये मौलवी हजरत का कसूर है कि जिन्होंने पब्लिक के प्रेस के सामने अमराजे का हुक्म बयान नहीं किया, तब्बू बन के बैठे रहे, हराम काम होता रहा मौसरे में, चुप होके बैठे रहे, ठीक है ना। ऐसे मौलवियों को बुलाना छोड़ दीजिए जिनके अंदर जुरत नहीं है कि इमाम सादिक अलैहि सलाम की शरीयत का हुक्म बयान कर सके। आयतुल्लाह कुई रहमतुल्लाह अलैह, यू नो फ्रॉम इंडिया सम पीपल सेंट अ क्वेरी टू आयतुल्लाह कुई रहमतुल्लाह अलैह एंड ही रोट हिज रिस्पांस. And some people got upset from the response of Ayatullah Khuy. And a scholar, a Maulana, wrote a letter to Ayatullah Khuy again that, there are so many people who are following you in India, and if you give this kind of response, this is against our habit, our routine and all that. People don't expect you to say that. Is there a way, can you please alter your opinion or rethink about your fatwa? He scolded in the response. He said, this was the seerat of Yahud and Nasara. When the hukum of Allah was told to them, they were running after doing left and right, doing ta'wil and tawji and lame excuses to justify their wrong behavior and to pressurize the prophets of God to change their policy because they were not ready to give up their pleasures. We are not followers of Yahud and Nasara. The hukum of Imam Sadiq Islam will be told the way it is. There will be no change. That's why we respect our maraje. That's why they have so high spirituality. May Allah protect all of them. So first of all, it's not permitted. Second of all, if the blood comes on your body, you have to clean it. If it comes on your dress, it's like I said, it's less than the magnitude. All the droplets combined on your dress are less in magnitude than the magnitude of your thumbnail, then you can pray in it. It is najis, but you can pray in it. You can clean it later on. But if it is more than that, you have to, it should be less than that amount. So,
if, let's say, boy, in this kid you have that, the boy is playing and he fell and he has a wound on his knee and he's bleeding a little bit and he comes and going for salat. And what is the, how should we address that? Should they have to clean the wound and then just wait it dry and then do wuzu and then do salat? Is that how it should be done?
Yeah, if the blood is not gushing out and doesn't stop, if usually in small wounds the blood comes out a little bit and it stops. In that case, you just wash it. If you can wash it on top of it, water is not harmful, just wash it. And and then you do the wudu, whatever, and go for prayers. If the blood is still coming out and it does not stop, then you put the bandage on it. You put the bandage and you can do nothing about it. It's beyond your control. Go do wudu and pray. It's okay. But you cannot stop it. It's not beyond your control.
Well, one question I have is that in our culture, especially Indo-Pak culture, parents are reluctant to talk about these infrequently asked questions. They're reluctant to how to address the kid when they're turning that age. Do you have any suggestions for us as being parents? What age should we start talking about these topics and how strong should we when we're explaining these things to them?
Well, I think the mother should explain all the wajib things and inform about the haram things that we need to abstain. Mother should do that towards the daughter at the age of 7 latest. And the father should inform the son at the age of 7 as latest. Prophet has said the child should be trained about the prayers at the age of 7. It's not wajib on the child, or son or daughter, to do it, you know, in the age of 7. We all know that. But that's the way you have to do it, because if you don't do it in this way, and you allow the son or your daughter to reach the age of maturity, and on the day one of the maturity, when the time of fadl comes and he becomes baligh or she becomes baligh, on that day you keep bring your daughter or your son in front of you and start reading the list of wajib, there's nothing to happen. You know, you put the, you are holding a scarf, and as soon as the time you kicks, and the father, you just throw the scarf on the head of your daughter. Now it's wajib. It's nothing to happen like this momentarily. It's not a robotic effort taking place in an assembly line production of something, you know. So it's a matter of training. It's a human being. You have to train your daughter and son in such a way, raise him or her in such an environment that she feels her responsibility. He feels his responsibility towards Allah, you know. So basically, 7 is the minimum, is the last deadline for us to delay. So as soon as a boy or girl reaches the age 7, now is the last time for us. We should start teaching them. We can start it before 7. Very good if you can start before 7 gradually. Of course, the child doesn't understand everything, but whatever he or she understands, still good. It builds and constructs his or her spirituality. So at the age 7, as latest, we should start teaching so that they learn these things by the age of maturity. When he or she reaches the age of maturity, they know by then what they are supposed to do. So all the wajibs should be told without hesitation. And the haram should be informed so that they are well aware and they should keep away from those harams. In some of the religious families in Iran, there's a very good tradition that they hold Jashne Taklif, celebration of Taklif al-Shar'i. And celebration of on the day when their son or daughter becomes baligh. Some religious families hold a celebration for that. That was a tradition started. That was something, the taklif thing, which was actually mentioned by Sayyid ibn Taus rahmatullah alayh for the first time in our history, one of our greatest scholars. Our scholars say that maybe the person who has met with Imam Mahdi al-Islam most of the time, more than any other scholar in the greater absence period, is Sayyid ibn Taus. So he's one of our greatest scholars. So basically, why the religious families in Iran, they celebrate this Jashne Taklif, this celebration of son or daughter reaching the age of Islamic maturity? Because now is the time my son or my daughter is entitled in the eyes of Allah to do something. Allah who held my son or my daughter to be eligible to do certain things. So this is the age where we should be responsible enough. We should be able to feel the responsibility. We should be able to do the job. We are able to do the job. That's why Allah obliges us. Allah never has taklifu ma la yutaq, something which is beyond our reach, and we are never obliged. Because that is qabih and condemned. And Allah is beyond all the condemned attributes. We say subhanallah. We glorify him from all the condemned attributes and all sifat al-qabiha and all what the humans assign, associate with him, the attributes of the makhlukeen and creatures. So basically, when Allah obliges a son or daughter to do certain duties at certain age, the son and the daughter is able to do that. That's why Allah obliges. And any duty which we are totally unable to do is beyond our reach, it no longer remains our duty.
One question there, and then we have one more question, and we inshallah will finish
up. So, for example, Master, like when we are praying on the first line, like actually on something like the bad cat, so should we have to walk out of the namaz?
Well, when praying,
so many people behind me, so many people after me.
Yeah, it's better for you to pray some other qaza prayers if you have, or qaza prayers for someone else if you know somebody of you among your relatives or family have qaza prayers, you can pray that for him, you know. Those people who have passed away, for the living people, we cannot do the qaza prayers for them, they have to do themselves. So it's good. Otherwise, if you don't have any qaza prayers or any other qaza prayers for some other dead person of your acquaintance, then you can keep on sitting there. Walking out is not haram in Islam, but you should think that in some cases, because let's suppose here is the Imam of Jamaat standing and somebody standing here. Now this guy is connected with the Imam of Jamaat through you. So if I walk away, then I have to take into consideration this another guy was standing here, and I was standing here, then the next guy was standing here. So the distance between the next person's place where he was standing and this person's the place where he's standing, because if I walk away, it's just like a gap, as if there's no human here. So it's a gap. So now his place of standing and this person's place of standing should be less than 2 steps for this guy and the rest of the people to stay in touch with the Jamaat. So how would the Jamaat remain intact if the distance of his standing and his standing is less than 2 steps? So if I walk away, I should take into consideration that if I get removed, if I walk away, if the distance is more than 2 steps, then I'm harming their Jamaat. So either if I intend to walk away, I should better sit at the end of the Jamaat, so that I can easily walk away and nobody is disturbed. Or I make sure that the distance is less than 2 steps. Or I pray some other qaza prayers, one of the three.
I actually have a connected question on that. This came up this afternoon as well. At what point do you recite your surahs behind your imam that's being led by, you know, a namaz being led by, at what point do you stay quiet?
So you have to stay quiet always when imam is reading the hamd and the next surah. You don't have to read anything in any prayers among the 5 prayers. You just stay silent. Even if you do not hear the voice of the imam, you can still stay silent. You don't have to read the hamd and surah.
Okay, we have 5 minutes more now. We just want this thing. We want take home message. What take home message would you give us throughout the day? First off, it was halal and haram. Second was mehram, na mehram, and third one was taharat and najasat. If you can give us just 2 lines for each of them, your take home message is this for the day. We appreciate that. Just in a nutshell, or maybe you can put all together and say, you know what, why, as you mentioned earlier, the rules, we talk about this fiqh, the idea why we are not following the rules, why we are so away from the teachings of Al-Bayt, something that we can take home with and just think at home and ponder on it.
Yeah, please write down this hadith of Imam Hussain al Islam. I would like every one of you to write down this hadith, please.
Can you write, please? It all depends. If you guys want to stay here, but Moana is also tired, remember that he's been here all day. While Moana is writing this, let me remind you, inshallah, we're going to put this whole day session on our website. IZFNA.org. So if you have missed the earlier part of the program, it's going to be on the website, inshallah. And also, we'll try to burn CDs, and we'll have on CDs as well. So inshallah, for the next program, we'll try to have it so you can have it at home and you can review it, this program, and also to remind you that this, inshallah, this Fiqh and Fun camp is a series, and this is the first of the series. Inshallah, we at least do at least 3 times a year, if not more, 3 or 4 a year. So obviously we'll invite you for each of them. So inshallah, we have different topics, and you can learn questions and ask about Fiqh, and hopefully follow the Sirat Mustaqim. And our next program obviously is Ramadan program, and if you are those families who have signed up for the Ramadan family program, I have emailed you those things, the list. If you have any specific question about the program, ask me, because it's coming up next week. So you have to know if you're the first few teams who are sponsoring it. So you have to get together with your family members and come up with a plan for the iftar. So please talk to me afterwards, and then, or call me at home, please. And just one more announcement. If you haven't received any emails from us, invitations or anything like that, please give us your email address. We'll put you on our list of the IZFNA family, and we will invite you for all our events in the future. So please give us your email addresses. And
just email us.
Email us. Oh, you can email us at info IZFN.
Beautiful ahadith of Imam Hussain al-Islam, although all his ahadith are equally beautiful. Man hawala amran bi ma'siyatillah kana afwat lima yarju wa asra lima yahdhar. There are lots of people who are trying to do different kinds of compromises over Islamic values and principles and rulings, supporting the taghuts, putting up the taghut governments, justifying their policies, doing different kinds of harams in their lives, in their jobs, in their workplaces, in their lifestyles, in their family matters, doing different kinds of harams, ma'siyatullah, so that they can achieve certain things in this dunya. Imam Hussain has made it clear, whoever tries to achieve something through a sin towards Allah, he would lose what he is hoping to achieve sooner than otherwise. And he would fall into what he was trying to avoid, the danger what he was trying to avoid, he would fall into the danger sooner than otherwise. You should have trust in what the Masumeen have said. This will change your life. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless all of you and give you more tawfiq and ta'eed from Imam Sahib al-Zaman, alayhi salatu wa
salam.
Let's make the dua of Imam Sahib al-Zaman, alayhi salam, all together. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma kull waliyyika al-Hujjat ibn al-Hasan. Salawatuka alayhi wa ala abaih. Fi hadhihi as-sa'ati wa fi kulli sa'a. Waliyyan wa hafidha wa qa'idan wa nasira. ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Thank you
very much.
One more help we need, obviously, is a long day for all of us. So if you can just stay just a few minutes and help us out a little bit, clean up the place, because we will be really tired at the end of the day, and we are working for this for weeks now. So we'd appreciate if you stay back a little bit, just for a few minutes, and help us out, clean up, vacuuming, anyone can help us, just take some turns and do everything. Brother Salman, can you leave that clean up thing, just let people know what to do, and we have volunteers who will help us inshallah. Okay? Just tell them they...
Is it a non-Islam?